to start the hearing at this point. First of all, Mr. Huff, would you state your name and ADC number for the record, sir?
Yes, my name is William Huff, and my ADC number is 032976.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing for the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency this afternoon. This is home arrest, revocation this afternoon for the one allegation that we find on your warrant. I want to introduce you to the five board members who will be participating in your hearing this afternoon. And they are to your right, which will be to my left, to your right, the Honorable Mr. Rui Galanis. Next to him is the Honorable Mr. David Neal. Next to him is the Honorable Ms. Thea Rittenhouse. Next to her is the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson. My name is C.T. Wright. I will be serving as your lead, and I'm also chair of the board. We also have in the room with us this afternoon, so who should I introduce? Mr. Brady is in the room. Mr. Brady and also your parole officer is also in the room, but Mr. Brady and your parole officer will be representing the Department of Corrections as well as your parole officer of this afternoon, sir. Before I go further, we do acknowledge, and I will ask some other questions in a few minutes, I do want to acknowledge that your attorney is in the room. And, sir, to begin with, do you wish to speak for yourself, or do you wish for your attorney to speak on your behalf, sir?
I wish for my attorney to speak on my behalf.
Okay, well, first of all, we're going to follow our usual protocol, okay? Our protocol is at this point. I am going to read the, at this point, I want to swear, I'm just going to swear the three of you, four of you in at this point. I'm going to swear in you, Mr. Huff. Your attorney, please give your name, sir.
My name is Michael Kelski. I'm representing Mr. Huff. It would be inappropriate to swear in the counsel.
No, sir. Our protocol is we do, sir. Yes, sir, Mr. Grady. And Peter, the four of you, you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, to help you God, or do you so, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, to help you God, or do you so affirm?
I do. Dr. Wright, since the attorney's statements are not considered evidence or testimony, you don't need to swear him in.
Okay. Well, this is the first time that we're violating our policy, our protocol, okay? Thank you. Okay, now, Mr. Huff, you have one allegation on your warrant. I'm going to read that allegation, and I'm assuming that you wish for your attorney to tell me whether it's true or false. Am I correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And the allegation reads that Mr. Huff, that is William L. Huff, ADC number 032976, is in violation of Arizona Condition of Supervision number 12B, as demonstrated by his failure to not have any contact with anyone under the age of 18 without a parent or legal guardian and prior authorization or permission from his assigned parole officer or supervisor on November 25, 2018. Attorney, would you just step to the mic up here and tell us whether that statement is true or false, for that allegation, rather?
That allegation is false.
That allegation is false. Thank you, sir. As much as you stated that that allegation is false, we're going to receive testimony from the Department of Correction, then we will be given an opportunity, or Mr. Huff will be given an opportunity to tell us why it is false. So Mr. Brady or Ms. Flores?
Yeah.
Please state your name, Ms. Flores, just for the record.
My name is Lila Flores. I was Mr. Huff's assigned parole officer while he was on supervision.
Okay, and would you give us testimony on allegation number one?
Yes, allegation one. On Sunday, 11/25/2018, a field visit was conducted by Tucson Electronic Monitoring Unit team members P.O. Keen and P.O. Flores at the offender's residence. At 3052 North Alvernon Way, number 110, Tucson, Arizona, 85712. Offender opened the door and came outside, closed the door behind him, stating he had visitors. He said they were asleep. His fiance, they came outside and left the door propped open. He was asked who was visiting, and he stated it was Marina's, who is the fiance, that it was her sister with her kid. Pio King had a visual of the child laying asleep by the entrance floor in the living room area on a made-up bed. The offender was advised by Pio Flores that he was in violation of his conditions by having a child at his residence. Offender was asked when the visitors had arrived, and he said the day prior, which was Saturday. He stated that there were three other adults present. He was asked to get his copy of conditions, and he said he did not know where they were. He was asked why he did not call his assigned PO, and he said he did try, but was not good with phones or too familiar with voicemail. The offender was questioned when they were leaving the residence, and he said today. Pio Flores asked the fiancé the age of the child, and she stated 8 years old. She also confirmed they would be departing soon. Offender kept trying to change the subject and started talking about his brother's health, his employment situation with WestMed, and being concerned about his sister Wanda. Offender was directed to report to the parole office the next morning. Follow-up number one. On November 26, 2018, Pio Flores made contact with offender's fiance, Marina. She provided her sister's and all other visitors' information. She also verified the extent of the visit. Marina's sister is Veronica Ibarra. Sister's husband, David Ibarra, and their daughter, Danica Ibarra. Pio Flores contacted Veronica Ibarra telephonically. She was asked how long they had been visiting, and she said they got there Saturday morning and left Sunday around 11 a.m. When questioned if she knew the offender was in supervision, she denied it. She was also asked if at any given time during the visit the offender was left alone with the child. She said no. On November 26, 2018, the offender in office is directed. The offender was tasked with email supervisor, senior parole officer Victor Settles. He was informed that his violation was significant due to his history and it had to be addressed. Offender stated he tried calling his assigned PO, but there were no missed calls on either cell phone or desk phone. The offender tried calling his assigned PO. Oh, I'm sorry. The offender in the past had left numerous voicemails, sent text messages, and emails to his PO. He did not attempt to inform anyone that visitors just showed up at his residence. He said he tried communicating to his fiance that they could not be there. He said that the visitors came from California. It was determined that offender half would be returned to custody. He was then transported to ASPC Tucson and advised he would have an opportunity to go before the board.
Thank you so much, Ms. Flores. Attorney, would you come up again, sir?
Absolutely.
I believe that Mr. Huff said that you would speak on his behalf. And why is that allegation and that testimony false, sir?
Well, I think everything that was just testified to is correct, but it is not a violation of Condition 12B. If we could turn to Condition 12B and read that, we would see why that is so. Condition 12B, if I may read it directly from the Conditions of Supervision Special Condition, I will not reside with, be alone with, or have any form of contact with anyone under the age of 18 without a parent or legal guardian present and or, and the or is capitalized, not the and or prior authorization from or permission from my assigned parole officer supervisor. The very plain meaning of that condition is that one of two things must happen. Either the parent or guardian must be present, which they were, and the testimony just showed that, or he must have permission from the assigned parole officer supervisor. He did not violate that condition 12B as it is written in the plain letter of the law, the plain letter of the language on it, because again, the or is emphasized, not the and. The parent of the child was present the whole time. He was never alone with the child. The visit was temporary and overnight. He did not violate any condition of supervision as specifically written out by the Arizona Department of Corrections. And therefore, even though every statement was true, it is not a violation of that condition. And therefore, the board should return Mr. Huff to home arrest as he was previously, as his previous conditions were. I have with me a number of witnesses that will simply add to the weight of that evidence that the parent or guardian was present the entire time, and that he was never alone with that. But if I may offer to the board, there's the letter from the parent indicating the same thing. May I offer that to the board?
You may. We will not return it, but it will be a part of the record, sir.
Absolutely.
Okay, it's okay.
Anything. I know it's a very technical legal issue, but we have to go with what is actually in the written conditions of release. It says or. It emphasizes the condition or. The parent or guardian was present the entire time. That he did not have prior permission from his parole officer is really of no weight here today for the purposes of the revocation hearing. He did not violate the conditions of release and supervision. I think the board simply should find that it should have had a probable cause hearing. It should have found that the probable cause hearing had failed. Since it didn't do that, we're doing that here now, and for lack of a better way of arguing it, probable cause should fail because it did not violate the technical language of the conditions of supervision, and the evidence here doesn't contradict. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Flores, would you or your colleague have anything to say as it relates to whether this allegation is true or false now?
Yes. I am going to refer to...
Please state your name for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Parole Officer Flores. I will refer to condition number 2 where it says, I will maintain contact with my supervising officer and follow all directives I'm given, either verbal or written. When we conditioned Mr. Hogg, we explained to him, regardless of how the condition was written, if it's emphasized the and or the or, that it was very specific that he needed to let us know if he was interested or there was a situation where he would have contact with any children, that he would need to let us know beforehand so we could determine the situation, if there was another responsible adult that knew about his conditions and his restrictions and his supervision, and we would determine that. Also, I would like to let the board know he was also on federal probation, and I spoke to his federal probation officer, who also has the same condition, and who also explained to him that he needs prior authorization from federal probation and us, state parole, for him to have any child contact beforehand.
Okay, now just for my information, once again, why or how do you say or why would you say that he was aware of the fact that those that he should not have contact with anyone under age? Once again, just for the record.
As he signed the conditions, and it was also explained to him, and it was also given to him as a verbal directive, that he could not have contact with anyone under the age of 18. And that's why it says, and or prior authorization from parole.
Thank you. Attorney?
Mr. Chairman.
Change your name again, sir. I'm sorry to do that.
Again, my name is Michael Kielski, and I am the intern for Mr. Hoff.
Yes, sir.
And while I appreciate the position taken by the parole officer, Ms. Flores, and I understand what she's saying, the problem is this. We live in a society where we do have a lot of rules, and the reason that parolees are given written conditions of probation is so that they understand exactly what the rules are with specificity. It would be very inappropriate for the board to say, well, we know the children is writing that it says or, but you know, we now have testimony that you know you should disregard the or. I mean, if that was the case, then just write it down. How difficult is that? It's been presented in writing. I'm also going to take objection to any statements regarding what the federal parole officer does or doesn't do. It has no bearing on what this board needs to do. That may be an independent matter that is dealt with at a different hearing in a different capacity. For the purposes of this board, the rules are pretty straightforward. The conditions of supervision are exactly as they are set forth in writing. They are included in the warrant packet. Probable cause fails, and therefore this he should be reinstated to home arrest. If the board or the parole or the Department of Corrections or parole officers feel that it is important that that condition be clarified, then why don't they go ahead and change that in writing, to change the order to the end and emphasize that. But again, as under the conditions of supervision under which Mr. Huff was released, the conditions clearly stated for, and there's no evidence, nothing in writing that indicates that was changed. The only thing in writing that we have, the only good evidence that we have of his actual condition is that.
But yet again, I want to emphasize.
Go ahead.
Let's understand in practice what happened here. It was Thanksgiving. The sister, child, and husband of his fiancée came over, and they stayed late. They spent the night. That was it. The next morning, parole officers stopped by and immediately was taken in custody. This was a passing, momentary, not even technical violation, because technically it wasn't a violation, but it was a passing, momentary event with not only just one parent present, but both parents present the entire time. Mr. Huff was never alone with the child. I know how serious it is given his past history, but under the circumstances and under the specifics of this matter of the conditions that he was under, I emphasize that probable cause fails and the board should return to his conditions of supervision under home arrest. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. But are you suggesting, sir, that the board ignore this policy? I mean, I know what you're saying about and or, and I understand that, sir, but are you suggesting that we just ignore that the board just ignores, is it ignored?
No, I'm telling the board they need to read it. They need to read
it. Yes, sir.
In detail. And it says or. But in the parent or guardian, both parents or guardians were present. So he did not violate the rule.
Well, let me ask this question, you sir, on behalf of Mr. Huff.
Sure.
Are you saying that whatever was explained to him by the Department of Corrections when he was released and he signed it, let's put aside the NR, that should be ignored, sir?
I'm not saying it should be ignored. I'm saying you should follow the letter of what he signed. Again, I'm holding a copy that was just given to me by the board today, and I can see clearly here where he signed it and it was dated 10/24/2017. I don't know what was explained to him before or after, even given some weight to that it was explained to him, but whatever was explained to him that contradicts what was given to him in writing should not and cannot, under due process rules, override what was given to him in writing. And again, there's a remedy for this. It's a simple remedy, and they know what the remedy is. They just need to correct their conditions of supervision to change the order to an end, and that's fine. But the conditions of supervision under which he was operating clearly state, and the conditions that he was provided clearly state. I'm not asking the board to ignore that. Absolutely not. I think the board simply needs to follow the rules and the law and hold Mr. Huff to the rules and the law as he was provided in writing for which he signed. Going forward, if they want to and need to change the conditions of supervision, I think that's perfectly fine, and I don't think Mr. Huff has any objections to that. But again, it was not a technical violation because technically he did not violate. And to the extent that the board is concerned about the contact, both parents were present the entire time. It was less than 24 hours. He was immediately taken into custody. There was no violation technically, and whatever contact there was always under supervision of at least two adults, if not three or four.
And of course, I'm going to ask you now, sir, yes. Should come under phase two of this hearing. I'm going to ask this of you at this point.
Sure.
Should this board totally ignore the fact that when the parole officer showed up, he did not want to, apparently based on what we have in writing, go back to writing, he did not want the parole officer to see that the child was in that room, sir?
That's not what I take it off from what was testified to. I take
it what did you take that was testified to, sir?
I take that he was simply alerting them that there were guests in the home, that there was, at least based on what we know from the testimony, that at least one of them was asleep. And so he was simply acting like any host would act, which is simply saying, well, I've got guests over, that's all. I don't think he was keeping anybody from access. I haven't heard anything that said he was keeping anybody from anybody, the parole officers, from entering or doing whatever that they needed to do. They obviously did. So again, I know that you're looking for me to say that he did something wrong here. And
no, I'm looking for the facts, sir. That's all I'm looking for. That's all this board is looking for, the facts, so that we can make an informed decision. We're not trying to say what's right or wrong on your part. We just want to make sure that we get all of the facts, sir.
And this is why I said right at the beginning, I think everything that was testified to is absolutely correct. It's a correct statement of what happened. But now we need to interpret what those facts mean. Again, I'm offering the board, go ahead and elicit additional testimony from a parole officer. If she was there, if she knows, if he tried to impede at all the entry of the parole officer.
That was going to be the next question I'd ask once you got finished talking, sir. That was the next question I was going to ask the parole officer.
Sure.
If, based upon, I believe that she was there, am I correct, parole officer Perez, and was there another officer present at the same time, sir, ma'am?
Yes, so it's Parole Officer Flores, and my co-worker partner is also here present if you would like him to step forward as well. So we both were there on November 25th.
And what was your interpretation of what happened at that door, or your parole, or your colleague?
Okay, from prior experiences, when we would come and visit Mr. Huff, he would be very welcoming. He would open the door and invite us in. So when we get there, we were not even planning on swinging by because he had put on his itinerary that he was going to be at church. We happened to be out in the field making other visits. We were nearby. We checked on his monitor. He was at residence. So we stopped by. We knocked on the door. And it was really strange to me that instead of like being welcoming as he typically would be, he walked outside really quietly and just really close to me and just closed the door behind me. And I was like, what's going on? I didn't understand that because I had before that was not the situation.
Okay. Did your colleague add anything at this time? Did you want to add anything?
Yes, sir. Would you like me to come forward?
Yes, please come forward, sir, if you have anything to add. Only if you have something to add, sir. Okay, first of all, state your name.
It's Parole Officer Selwyn King.
And would you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God and your soul upbringing, sir?
I do.
Thank you, sir.
Just to follow on what Parole Officer Flores said, on our arrival, the way in which we were greeted at the residence, which was very different to our normal experience. When Mr. Huff exited the residence, he opened the door barely enough to get himself through the doorway. It was basically him touching the door frame and the door as he slid sideways out of the residence. And that was very unusual. As Ms. Flores has stated, he had previously invited us in when there had been other people in the residence in various states of dress, I might add. Where there was no concern about who else was in the residence. It was always, come in, come in, come in, please look around. But this was very, very unusual.
Thank you, sir. Board members, do you have any questions as relates to this allegation? Honorable Mr. Rittenhouse.
I guess my question would be for Parole Officer Flora, or maybe Parole Officer King, too. Who was present at the time that, were you physically present? It appears that's your signature when he was conditioned, when it was explained to him.
Yes, I personally explained it to him. Every conditions, I particularly like to go over the special conditions. If there's any questions or concerns, I always ask, but I do explain to them what the condition states and what it means.
I'm particularly interested in condition number 2 that says I will maintain contact with my supervising officer and follow all directives I am given, either verbal or written.
Yes.
And you explained that to him?
Yes.
That day. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Mr. Neal?
I have to go back to the and/or. because I am not a lawyer. I'm not familiar with the way the court interprets things, but I've seen that normally they interpret the English language the way it's normally used. And normally when you have a condition like this, where it says that, you know, he has to have, without parent or legal guardian present, and that means there's something else that goes along with the parent or guardian. The or means that it can be or the next condition, not anything to do with the first condition. So and means parent or guardian and the parole officer. Or means or he can have contact with somebody under the age of 18 without a parent or guardian around if the PO says it's okay. That's what the or means. The or doesn't mean that it can have the parents without approval of the PO. And that's my understanding of the English language, and I think I have a fairly good understanding of the English language and its usage, at least by a common person. Maybe not by a lawyer or the legal system, because there are differences in the way they do things, but I don't see where this issue is a problem, because he didn't meet that condition, according to my understanding of the English language.
Thank you so very much, Honorable Mr. Neal, and we will point out the fact that this is not a court of law, so that's, I would also point that out. But other board members, any questions or discussion as it relates to allegation number one being true or false? The Honorable Mr. Kalanis.
Yeah, just to follow up on the Andor question, as we have the parole officers present, did you get specific with Mr. Huff about the Andor issue?
Yes. Like,
and how?
You need to ask for authorization to have contact with anyone under the age of 18 from parole. You need to have prior authorization.
Thank you. No further questions, sir.
Thank you so very much, Honorable Mr. Kalanis. Any further questions by any board member? Okay, I don't see any further questions by any other board member at this time. Okay, I believe you want to offer something, attorney, sir?
Yes.
Please come back up, sir. I hate to do this to you, but we're recording this, and so we want to make sure that we get everything recorded, sir.
I would ask that the board of honor would call a witness, Marina Romero, the fiancé who was present that day.
Okay, yes.
I don't know how you would like me to ask her questions, but I'd be happy to just ask questions, or if you would.
Let me show you any questions and get that out, then we can go from there. Okay, would you state your name for the record, ma'am?
Hi, my name is Marina Romero.
And do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God, or do you so affirm?
Yes.
Okay, so what would you like to tell the board at this time, ma'am?
I wasn't aware of his conditions, and I invited my sister because she was homeless, and they didn't have anywhere to go with her husband and her kids. That's the reason I did it, and she was only going to stay one night, and she was going to leave on Monday and Sunday morning. I didn't do it so he can violate his parole. And but other than that, he was working, he was doing okay. And I think he deserves a second chance.
Okay, if we get to phase two, we'll hear all of that, but right now we just want to see if his allegation is true or false. I believe that you want to ask some questions, sir, on the
matter. Yeah, allow me to do this. Well, during the time that the child was present in your home,
yes.
Were you present the entire time?
Yes, I was.
And was Mr. Huff ever alone with the child?
No, he wasn't.
Was the there were two parents of the child there too, correct?
Yes.
And were both of them always present with the child?
Yes, they were.
And were you always present with Mr. Huff?
Yes, I was.
So at no time during this brief period was he ever alone with the child?
No.
Did he ever talk to the child or communicate with the child?
No.
That's all the questions I have.
Thank you.
Ma'am, before you sit down, you were saying for 24 hours, that whatever that time frame was, 24 hours he did not communicate with the child at all. The child was there, he didn't even say, hello, how are you doing? Glad to have you here, or what's your name, or nothing of that nature?
He did say hello, but he never talked to her or anything. And my sister and my brother-in-law were there.
So your sister and brother, they just showed up. They were traveling. Where were they going? You said they came from California. So where were they headed to?
They were looking for an apartment, and I didn't want to leave them on the street because it was cold, and I didn't want him to violate the parole or anything.
Do we have any questions?
Johnson. I'm just trying to just understand. Were they en route to California, or were they here looking for an apartment?
They were here looking for an apartment.
Okay, so they weren't en route to California?
No.
Okay. So they were here, and they were looking for an apartment, and they were homeless, and you allowed them to stay with you?
Yes, but I never knew of my fiance's conditions.
Okay. All right. So were they there for that one night, or were they there
for more? Yes, one night.
So how long have they been homeless?
For a few months, and now they got a home, but... That's all I got to say.
I didn't quite understand what you said. So could you repeat that, please?
Now they were homeless for a few months, and now they...
They have an apartment in Tucson?
Yeah.
Okay, so. All right, thank you.
May I just ask this, ma'am? You said they have an apartment in Tucson. And I know that this was not necessary, but you or Mr. Huff decided not to invite them for this hearing today. As important this is for Mr. Huff, so they could say themselves what they thought was happening while they were there, ma'am.
Well, they weren't homeless, and they just now recently got an apartment.
But I'm saying, why didn't they? Why aren't they invited to be here today? That's what I'm asking at this hearing.
They couldn't come because they had to pick up their kids from school, and my brother-in-law has to work.
So how many kids do they have?
They got the total of 5 kids.
And those 2 kids were there at your residence when this incident took place that we're talking about now?
Yes.
And so how many rooms do you have in the residence, may I ask?
One-bedroom apartment.
In the apartment. You have one bedroom? What else do you have? One kitchen, one dining room? What else do you have there?
A room, a kitchen, and dining room.
Okay. I don't want to be personal, but where do people sleep? You said that they stayed overnight.
They sleep I offered them to sleep in the living room.
So they slept in the living room,
yes.
And you slept in the bedroom.
And me and my fiance slept on our room.
Okay, any further questions? Okay, we'll go back to Mr. Johnson, then we'll come to you, sir. Mr. Johnson.
I'm just trying to just make sure I got it clear. They had 2 kids.
Yes.
And how old were the kids?
The other one was like 13.
Okay, so in the report it talks about the one child who was 8 years old. Where was the 13-year-old at?
It was sleeping on the couch, and my niece was sleeping with him. There were never left alone.
Okay, but there were 2 kids, not just one. It was an 8-year-old and a 13-year-old.
Yes.
Thank you. Just for the sake of the full picture, ma'am, you said they had 5 kids then? Are the other 3 children adults or?
Yeah.
How old are they?
One is 18 and the other one is 17.
Okay.
And so they were living on their own someplace else?
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Yes.
Yes. Can I ask for a motion?
Yes. Oh, please come back. Another question here from the Department of Correction.
When did you or William Huff know that your sister was coming over to stay?
She had called me, and then she had told me that she was going to come over.
But when?
On Saturday.
Saturday morning before she arrived?
On Saturday afternoon.
Okay.
Well, question, let me just ask this one question, then we're going to see if there's anything else, then we will make a determination, make a decision, and the court will. Okay, so they arrived. Now, how long have you and Mr. Huff been fiancés?
About 6 months.
And how long have y'all been residing together?
Almost a year. It's going to be a year in March, in April.
And you have no idea what his terms or conditions were? You did not know?
He never told me.
He never told you? You resigned with him. He's just out of, not just out, but he's out of...
I met him when we were working at Target, and he never told me his conditions. Parole.
Did you know he was on parole? I mean,
yes.
But you never asked, what can we do, what can't we do? You never asked that, those type of questions, ma'am?
I did ask him, but he wouldn't tell me why he was on parole.
Okay, so he would not tell you. Okay. Yes, Ms. Fullers.
Can I make a quick statement?
Yes, ma'am.
Officer Gomez, after all this happened, I contacted the probation officer, the federal probation officer, and we were discussing this. She told me what she just stated, that she did not know that what his conviction was or his conditions. But probation officer provided me his entry from when he did a home visit, and he informed me that he made Mr. William Huff tell her why he was under arrest and that he could not have contact with any children.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Huff, you may sit down now. Mr. Huff, yes, you want to add something, sir.
Yeah. I just want to kind of like over some of the things that were said that I heard today. And, you know, like, I'm not going to really object to anything, because I think, as my attorney said, it's true, and up to a certain point. And the point that I want to stress is that the information that they claimed that they gave me, well, this information, you know, I mean, all I recall is they sit down and tell me to sign forms, right? Okay, so I signed forms, I put my initials down, every condition that they handed to me. But, you know, when you get a person, and you have to sit there and explain the condition to them, you can't explain it to them if the person is not informed. He really doesn't have any understanding as to what he's signed. He just signed it, and then returned it, and you read it. But they have to sit down, like my USPO did. He sat down with me for 2 hours and explained every condition that they did. They didn't do that over the last parole officer. March of 2017. I went down to the parole officer and I sat down with Mr. King. Now, he can tell you this is true. Because me and Mr. King were discussing about the family reunion that was going to happen in Tucson. My sister was going to bring her granddaughter up to my house. And there's going to be a large presence of children there. So I asked him, I said, Mr. King, would I be in violation of Rule 12? Because that's what we're talking about right now. I said, would I be in violation of this particular rule? Mr. King told me this. This is everything I stand on. He said, I don't have no personal issues with this, as long as they are accompanied by adults. He said, the fact that they're going to be over at the park is going to be a 3-day event. He said, put everything on an itinerary. So I put everything on an itinerary. The same thing as Ms. Bird would tell me. Now, all this other stuff about calling, I've never heard anything about calling. I don't know anything about calling right now. But they never told me to call. They always say, put it on the itinerary. Ms. Bird, I mean, if you know about the number of my itinerary, I put all my visitors on the itinerary. And I never put minors on there. This was an incident, and of course, responsibility for that. But this will be the good news, the people that I actually was trying to conceal something, I never tried to conceal anything. When I came out in the department that morning, I came out and I volunteered information to Mr. Roy and Mr. King. I didn't try to take the door and slide through the door. That's crazy. Because I want to be there close to the door because I didn't try to have respect to give the people a little privacy. So the room, she came out. But of course, you know, this is the child of the floor. But I had nothing to do with that. I had no contact whatsoever with that child. And then my fiance said, you know, I did say hello. That's something. This is my whole contact with him. But, you know, I do know what contact means. Contact means this. You cannot physically look at it, you can't say that, you can't telephone, you can't communicate in the morning. And this is what I've been doing the last 3 years when I was out. I've never had an incident of this magnitude until this afternoon. This was something that is unfortunate to me. So, you know, but I didn't want to clarify that. That was, you know, I didn't have the contact. Mrs. Flores, she, you know, she was a great PO to work with, but, you know, I think you're going to get her interpretation of something that I said was not correct.
Okay, thank you so very much, Mr. Huff. I'm just going to make one brief statement and then we're going to, and I'll let you say something, attorney, then we're going to move on. But my statement is going to be very simple. And Mr. Huff knows this, whether it's in writing or whether he heard it or not from this board. And that is that he was on home arrest. And home arrest, he was still an inmate. That's always explained by this board when someone is placed on home arrest. I believe that my colleague, Mr. Johnson, always emphasizes that. Each one of us have our own roles. Each time he emphasizes that you're on home arrest, you have to follow everything as if you are incarcerated. I just wanted to point that out. Yes, sir, attorney, then we're going to move on, sir.
Yeah, again, thank you, Michael Tosky, attorney for Mr. Huff. I just want to emphasize to the board, and I think the board knows this, but I want to make sure that it's on the record. The conditions of supervision, case law states that they must be they must be specific and they cannot be ambiguous. If there's any ambiguity, that again is a potential violation of the due process rights of the inmate. Again, we have to take this, there's a big picture here. And let's make sure that we understand the big picture. There is, at the very least, an ambiguity in the written release conditions. There is an issue as to whether or not the release conditions were provided to him, explained to him, and then in writing he was asked to sign them, he received them, and then he was required to follow the written release conditions. But the reality is, in this circumstances, in this particular situation, there was no contact with any child. There was a child that was present for a brief amount of time, which the child was never alone with Mr. Huff. There were always both parents present, as well as almost all the time other adults present. Under these circumstances, the board should vote to restore Mr. Huff to home arrest and make a finding that it is proper to restore him to home arrest.
Thank you so very much. Board members, any further questions by any board members? Yes, Dr. Johnson.
Doctor, I just had one question, and I don't know if the attorney wants to answer this, so
I'd be happy to.
All right, Mr. Huff. Mr. Huff made a statement that there was a time that the PO gave him a permission to go to some family event or at a park or something, and there were kids that were going to be around. I just wanted to get a clarification. If that's what he was saying, I just want to make sure it's clear.
You know, again, I heard the same thing, and his testimony is on the record, but let me help you put that in context very briefly. All that what Mr. Huff was explaining is that there was a past event where he knew there would be a situation coming up, where he knew there might be children present, and he discussed that with his PO, and according to Mr. Huff, what you just heard is that under those circumstances, his parole officer stated that he doesn't have any issues with that. Again, as you heard today, what happened here is a family came over with little to no notice and spent the night, and the following morning, not even 24 hours later, the following morning before Ms. Rose and Mr. King came by and took Mr. Huff into custody. So again, we're talking about if there was even a technical violation, but arguably it is not. The violation was of such a de minimis nature that it was proper to restore Mr. Huff to his home rights.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Yes, Mr. King, I've said we're not going to do anything with it since you're here, officer. Please come forward if you wanted to make a statement, because we're going to move on now, sir.
Thank you, sir. I just wish to clarify, Parole Officer King, with regard to the family reunion event. I'm glad you brought that up. I believe that event demonstrates his previous understanding of that condition. That event was pre-scheduled. It was pre-approved. He contacted me beforehand. I had contact with other family members, and we had an officer, actually myself, in the park intermittently during that event. So that was very well planned, and all those conditions as written were adhered to, and he had a full understanding of those conditions on that particular occasion.
Thank you so very much, sir. Let me just say for the record, as the board operates, we do not discuss anything in advance. The five of us have not discussed any of this before now. At this point, as board chair, I'm going to offer a motion. We'll see where it goes. I don't know how any other board members want to vote, but I am going to offer a motion at this point. And my motion is going to be based upon information found in warrant number 2018W3397, based upon testimony coming from the Department of Corrections through Ms. Flores, Officer Flores and Officer King, based upon information, discussions that we've had with Mr. Huff and his attorney. And my motion is going to be to find that Mr. Huff violated the terms and conditions of his supervision, that he was delinquent, that he had or may have lapsed into criminal ways. And that is my motion.
Second.
Agreed.
Motion by C.T. Wright, seconded by the Honorable Mr. Cabanis.
Yes, sir.
Agreed by the Honorable Ms. Ringhouse, the Honorable Mr. Neal, the Honorable Mr. Johnson. Sir, you've been found in violation of the terms and conditions of your supervision. Now we're prepared to go into phase two of your hearing. Phase two is the most important phase of this hearing, because at the end of phase two, this board is going to make a determination whether to revoke your supervision or whether to continue you on supervision. We're going to follow our usual protocol. At this time, we're going to receive some background information on Mr. Huff from the Department of Corrections. I don't know whether Ms. Flores or Mr. Grady. Who's going to give it to us? Okay, Mr. Grady.
Mr. Huff was released from jail on January 4th of 2016. He was arrested on November 26th of 2018 by parole staff. He has no new charges. He was returned back to DLC on November 26th of 2018. CNCD is life, is zero scum days, current conviction, murder in 1967. He has no prior convictions. His one term with DLC, his CUIR scores are 3-2, ULR scores are 2, substance abuse scores are 1. He has no gang affiliation, no prior term supervision, no disciplinary violations. Under arrest, 1967, murder, second degree, federal prison. 1979, murder, federal prison. Community risk score is a G1V1.
Okay, thank you so very much, Mr. Grady. Okay. I'm just going to very briefly just make a few read a few statements or a few comments as it relates to the case supervision statement. Then board members will have an opportunity to ask questions, then or make statements. Then Mr. Huff and or his attorney will be able to speak. They will make whatever comments they want to make. Then his supporters will be invited to come forward, that is Mr. Huff's supporters. Then victims or the state, the county attorney, will be able to come forward. That will be followed by a final statement by Mr. Huff and or his attorney, and the board will make a decision, a motion at the end of all of this following a discussion. So I just want to everybody know what we're doing now. So at this time, based on information that I see, Mr. Huff, that you did move around, and I don't know whether you want to answer this because all this is just preliminary, all this is in the case supervision summary, but you did move around a little bit. I do take note that in January of 2016, you was at El Pueblo, then in April of 2016, you went to a group home for 4533 East 18th Street in Tucson. Then in February of 2017, you went to El Pueblo again, and the same thing, I believe, again in 2017. And then in 2017, you went to the Behavior System Southwest in Florence. And then in 2017 through 18, you went to North Point Apartments in Tucson. And that's where you are currently residing, sir?
Yes, sir.
And while you were out, sir, did you find any employment, sir?
Yes, I did. Actually, I found several, but I was looking for a temporary hire. I did become a permanent hire because I got a place called Westbed. But they did plastic injection molding. And so I had to do, I think, for the 90-day job, so they didn't hire on as permanent. And during that time, though, I was also came to my CDL class. I went on my CDL certificate to come. And I was thinking of going to COVAC, which is like mental health counseling and all that. So I have been prepared for this year to do some state kind of visit with my job, my mental health counseling, and other issues that I have to. But on top of all the state that I did have, it was like I had 48 years, get out of prison, and then have to deal with the federal supervision and deal with the state supervision. So, I had to balance in between the two, and I made sure that I tried to walk the pipeline without violating. This violation actually was something that, because I didn't really think about this and try to be informative to my building, but I did it and was to the left. And so I tried to avoid, getting too criminal. I didn't have no contact with fellows, ex-fellows, or no drug users, no children. And I did the same thing with jobs and stuff, and I just touched that a couple.
Okay, now while you were out, I do take notes, sir, from the 16, and I'm not going over all of this, from 16 to 18, you had a number of UAs, and all of your UAs was negative. Am I correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
And while you were out, well, one thing that did catch my attention just a few moments ago, you stated that you was a counselor. What kind of counseling were you doing, sir, that job?
That's like a halfway. I had a job working at the halfway house, and I was like a peer counselor. In other words, I was like, because I just got out of prison, I was like a role model for that and get out of prison, so they gave me a position as a peer counselor. Really, it was just a house manager, that I had helped run me a facility. I went and got the mail for it. I guess you've seen that on TV a couple of times, and then I went to the mail for it. I went through nervous for the halfway house. So, my job was basically was to assist them to make sure that the guys were in the plant and the rules at the halfway.
Okay. I also take note, and it's not quite explained, so maybe you can explain it, that you have some type of medical condition, sir?
Yes, I did. I had what they call a DBT in my arm, and it was too poor when I was guilty because it would happen in college, it doesn't have a arm number. And when I went to the Tucson Medical Center, they found it was a big blood clot, and it was pouring to my heart, but it was a rib, a disc, and a rib, some kind of bone under the arm, and it was pressing the disc, the vein itself, and it prevented all the clotting through my heart, and they caught me just in time. And I still have a whole medication right now. I got this, I have to take it for the rest of my life. And then, I got a concussion from the accident I had a year ago. And so I've been taking medication for that. And, basically my overall health is pretty good. I'm getting older now, so I'm trying to take care of myself the best I can.
Okay. And since you've been out, I'm looking at mean, I know that your attorney said that this was not important. That's not his words, my words. But I do take note on 12, that's December 6, 2016, you reported that you had completed your appointment at the Center for Life Skills Development for testing related to mental health for your federal probation officer. So that you did complete that, sir?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. So have you had anything else to do along those lines, sir, or that's history?
Well, in regards to mental health, I was called Transition Skills. The group was it's called Moral Recognition or something. I think was the name of it, but it was definitely sponsored. They had to go down to the federal probation office, and they had a group there, and it was a group of people that had to tell stories about themselves and you know, relationship to communication skills. Relationship with people in general and trying to get past the criminal behavior. So, you know, I went to that forum maybe, I think that was in 26 years. I completed that, and it's called moral recognition, and that's the task. And so when I finished it, I got a certificate from the federal court down there with the judge, he was going to help me just keep it in the certificate for it. And so I just kind of like stayed busy then. I become the job, you know, looking at it. I haven't been involved. I was going through the AA, and I stayed in that forever. I stayed in the AA until all the time of the tuition of being out of the student. And I'm becoming not responsive, but maybe a mentor for other alcoholics up in there that was trying to, you know, build the cycle of drug being so drug addiction on that. And so that was basically what I was doing. And in my spare time, I would take food out of where I was being homeless people. I think the food that people feel really. And I'm just like, oh my dear, when I have time to risk the ride, I'm taking a bunch of food out. I'm going to beat people out there in the parks to let me do that. And that was basically how I had to do it. So if I was going to go ahead and I'm going to, you know, it's just where I am. You know, I don't expect, you know, people to look at me as a being an angel because of my history, you know, as you mentioned. You know, like last year was another thing that happened with the first half over this case. They threw everything out of proportion. And, you know, I mean, you know, I've been working with this one for the last 3 years, so that's that. You know, it hasn't been one thing. I haven't heard people call me all kind of, you know, monsters and this and that. You know, and I'm not that, you know, and I'm not a fair picture. I mean, they, when stuff do happen like that, it seems like it gets blown all the way out. You know, I have to sit here in front of you and explain, you know, the position of my head. But I'm not doing anything. I'm just, you know, a fair human being. I'm old, and I'll be 68 in March. And my wife, I don't know how many more good years I got left, but I'm trying to do the best I can, you know, and I guess some people I've been working with don't really have to feel like, you know, they're questioning, questioning. But there also comes time, you know, when I have to be true, I'm telling you, I haven't had any contact with any children, you know, and I didn't even have contact with this person in a year. And like, you know, we all need to be afraid, you know, we're not Superman. So I think that, you know, that we're not looking at the human factor of it, right?
Sir.
Yes.
Any questions, board members? Yes, Honorable Mr. Kilroy.
I got one, two, straight from protocol, but any questions relating to what we discussed up to this point, correct?
No, anything now, because this is phase two.
Okay, Mr. Hoff, I do have a question.
Yeah.
And that is, based on information that was brought up during phase one of this hearing, you showed concern, enough concern about the presence of children at a family gathering to inform your parole officer. Why didn't you have equal concern in a confined situation where there were children in your house? Why wasn't that what I would call a red flag, an immediate concern of yours that you would contact your parole officer and say that you have a situation? Why did you not do that?
Okay, first of all, I didn't have any prior knowledge that they were coming. and as my fiance, she explained, they came because she called them, and they called, and they went back, and they didn't come. So she didn't get any notification that, hey, I'm giving visitors, and you need to put this on your itinerary. So everything I do, I put it on my itinerary. Like, we can hear that, since I know they were coming, I would have put it on my itinerary to my people, and she would look at it, and she would say, yes, no, but then, you know, I could accept it. But I didn't have a mom that it was coming. It happened on a Saturday. Saturday afternoon, I had to get to a place at 9 o'clock that morning. And so my GPS runs because I had over connected earlier at 9 and didn't get back to 12:40 in the afternoon. So when I got back in the afternoon, they were already there. And so a weekend, trying to call the parole office, it's kind of impossible because there's nobody working on the weekend. So what I would do if I could call the central office there at the parole office, I would come, but they would tell me this, that because there's no parole office, there's nothing they can do for me. Right? So I was in a situation where,
was it your experience that no parole officer was available when you called the weekend hours?
Hello, someone's phone. We'll get some feedback from someone's phone, so please put it on mute.
Had you been in any past situations where you felt like you needed to notify your parole officers immediately because you weren't sure about a situation?
Well, there was a time I would call my people on Saturday, okay, and she's not working, so her phone would ring, and I would get an answer back saying this mailbox is full. So I don't call, I couldn't get to her on weekend. I even called because it was a Thanksgiving weekend. I tried to call, like say, Friday to the Saturday, they said, well, there's no problem, it's going to be on duty, so I couldn't call. And Saturday, when this family showed up, you know, I was putting like this little sort of rock in a hard place. And I didn't have no reason. They just showed up, they came there. And I'm just, but I did my best, this is what I did. I did my best to stay out of there after a visitation. You know, like she said, there's two rooms in the apartment. I stayed in the back room. You know, we got a TV back there. We got a bed. We got everything I need back there. Just like, kind of like self-protection. I went to the back. And I did come out. I did speak. I spoke to all of them. I said, you know, I'm glad to do anything now. I did like that. Because their conversation was always in Spanish. I never knew what they were talking about, so I just kind of separated myself. And as far as they getting to call Miss Burrows on Saturday night, I couldn't get off. She's not working. She's not working. I have called before, and I asked another before the weekend.
Mr. Elf, I recognize that you were surprised by the situation. And if that's the way it unfolded, I understand that. But it seems that you were thoughtful enough to separate yourself from the children in that small environment.
Yes.
Am I correct that you did not even try to call your parole officers or leave a message?
I called their office, not their office, I called the central control room there. And the officer that was on duty, I said, are there any parole officers on duty? And he said, no. And I'm never calling for that particular situation. I was calling because I wanted to let them know that my brother's wife had passed away. She died like 2 days before Christmas, 2 days before Thanksgiving. And I wanted to know if I could go to Phoenix with me and my sister working to go to Phoenix and probably finish it for a year or so after tomorrow. And that was I was calling
her. Okay, so with respect, you did not try to call your Arizona parole officers because of the sudden presence of children in your house or your apartment.
Yes, it was certainly at the time, which was a weekend, and their officers are not open on the weekend.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hart.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Mr. Huff, I have questions about, there was information in the warrant that includes other violations that you have on home arrest supervision, and a couple of them are violations of your itinerary. They're curfew violations. And I'm curious, you've mentioned itinerary a couple of times and how you were careful to put, I think you were talking about the family reunion event, and you were careful to put that on your itinerary. And yet you had some other violations. It looks like one at Performance Bike in Tucson, and another one at Dollar Tree. So why were you able to be so careful in one case on the itinerary and then have these violations, sir?
Well, we put violations with it, you think of that happened because I had actually went by my clock, and my clock was on. And so when I'm thinking was sometimes I was actually just like 30 minutes, I think it was 30 minutes ahead of time because I went by the time they had on my clock. And so when I got a text message from, I guess, Ms. Burris, she texted me and said I was in violation of my curfew or something. I looked and I said, wow. And when I looked at the time that she said, and I was like 30 minutes over, and then I ended up with a performance by the time, and I went to, I went to a Walmart store, a Dollar Tree movie, and I was off time. So when I got back home, you know, she was right, I was off time, and I did actually violate that curfew there. And so when they called me to the office, they gave me a verbal reprimand about that, and the week I went, and she told me that there were that I could have been on my incentive that kind of deal.
Okay, sir. And I can understand one violation, but then not finding an accurate clock for the second violation. That's the part I'm having a hard time understanding.
Yeah.
I also see that at one point you didn't charge your battery. Did you forget to charge your battery? Or?
I did because I went to sleep and I overslept, and when I woke up it was kind of like flash red on me.
Okay.
And that was just because I went to sleep and I went down. I think it was the ambulance. It was my first pill. And he called me and he told me I had to pay close attention to my ankle monitor, and that's what I did. And so I never. That's the last time that ever happened, so I kind of like, you know, make sure that I was always working. I'm telling you, we're at the same time every day.
Okay, and that kind of goes back to what Dr. White said, that, you know, Mr. Johnson always reminds people, when they're on home arrest, you're still an inmate, so you have to pay. It's very difficult to be on home arrest, as I'm sure you know. But you really do need to follow all of the specifics, sir.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Huff, you've been before this board several times, is that right?
Yeah, I have too.
And I thought I heard you mention just a minute ago about how it's been a high publicity case that you've been on and that you've had to come before this board, and some of the things that may have been said that may have not have been true, or how people was looking at it. Is that right?
Yeah, but I understand my situation, and I understand people's feeling about me as a person, you know. And I don't fault nobody, but, you know, for myself, you know, for putting myself in this position. So, you know, when I do come to the board, well, I'm always trying to hear things, and so if I hear things that, you know, I might not agree with, I'll probably just, you know, keep it to myself. But I always criticize the things that I say or something that I have done. And I think when I came from every hearing that I've been to up to this point, I think from the hearing the thing that I need to do, because you have been my best advisor and you've been telling me what I should be doing, and then I take that as a constructive criticism. And you know, I know everybody's not gonna look at it like that, everybody don't get it being as a 16-year-old, whatever, you know, right now, you know, but that's not what I want people to look at anymore. You know, I try to
sir, based on the information, would you say that your case has always been a high-profile case?
Yes, it has always been, because even from the incident of the time that the crime, the office back in 1967, it was received as high press, you know, all the way from 1982, 85, last year, and even I would imagine if this happened, because it probably received some high press, but yes, it has always been high profile.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Anything else, board members? Yeah, nothing else. Then we will go to supporters, and I'm going to ask supporters not to repeat something that's already been said, but we do want to give them an opportunity because we're going to run out of time after a while. So any supporters, I leave it up to your attorney to tell who's going to come up and who's not going to come up, sir.
Yes. Wanda Bishop, Mr. Huff's sister, would like to say something.
Okay. Swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So help you God, or do you so?
My name?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm having trouble hearing because.
Okay, let me start over. First of all, what is your name, first of all?
My name is LaVonda Bishop.
And do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth? So help you God, or do you so affirm?
Yes,
sir. And so what do you want to tell the board, ma'am?
What I want to tell the board is this. 52 years I've stood here or sat in on conversations. The last time I stood here, I was hoping that was the last time I was going to stand here. This man is guilty of nothing other than trusting and loving people and thinking people like him, they like him. I had told him several times to ask his girlfriend, to tell his girlfriend. I said, have you told her? And he would say, no. I said, why not? Because I'm afraid of losing another person in my life. He's lost all his siblings except myself and my older brother. And this is the only person that looked at him as a man and treated him as a human being. Okay? I've seen Ms. Flores several times when she has visited my brother. I see no compassion in this woman. I've seen no care. I've seen no concern. All I've seen and I've heard was threats about sending him back to prison. Every time he said a word wrong, he's going to go back to prison. And I don't trust her. I like Mr. King. I like him very much. But I do know that they have a job to do. And that's what he has to understand. They're not your friend. There's nobody in here your friend, except me and the people that you're related to. They are not your friend. They have a job to do. And it's up to you to understand and try to get an understanding of what they want from you. I've been with my brother for 3.5 years since he's been out. He's a wonderful man. He's not going to kill anybody. He's not going to hurt anybody. He won't even hurt anybody's feelings. He's had to stop me from hurting people's feelings hundreds of times, okay, because I'm upfront. This man, all he wants is a normal life. The scales of justice have never been tipped in his favor, ever, since 1967. When he was just a child. A 16-year-old boy went in and a 16-year-old man came out. Because they don't grow you into a man in prison. And I think he's made wonderful strides. A mistake, I was there today when he was a few minutes late. First thing she did was say, well, you're going to have to send your team before we get parole. There are other avenues with people like this. This is a 67-year-old man. This is not a kid. And I think there's time for everybody to look at his list, stop. I'm getting angry because every time I hear him talk, you guys stop him. He gives you an answer, and you won't take his answer. This is a grown man. This is not a child. And if he says, I did this because, or I got this because, or I whatever because, then you need to accept that as his word. But I have enjoyed the 3.5 years of helping him back into society. I have enjoyed the time that we've spent together, and I mean it's been numerous times. This is not an animal, as the newspaper calls him. This is a human being with the best heart, and in fact, so many people need to go to prison and stay as long as he did. We might have a better society, because this is a very good man, and all he wants is a chance to live out his old life. He doesn't have 67 more years to live. Leave him alone. That's all I have to say.
Thank you so much. Any questions, Board members? No. Thank you so very much for coming.
I would respectfully ask that to have Mr. Charles Brown come up and make some statement.
I am going to ask again that we would limit our conversation and please do not repeat anything that has already been stated. First of all, what is your name, sir?
Good afternoon. My name is Charles Brown.
And you swear to tell the truth, tell the truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God. Do you swear for him, sir?
I do.
So what do you want to tell the board this afternoon?
So, I'm 39 years old, and I was born in 79. When I was born, my uncle was incarcerated. I didn't know him. I knew him through occasional visits to the prison, and that was about it. I was asked to testify today as a character witness on his behalf, so I want to focus my testimony on the man I've known since he was released, I believe, January 2016, so the almost 3 years since he's been released. And I don't want to take a lot of time in saying what I'm going to say, just because I know there's other witnesses who are probably be more articulate, more compelling than I. One thing that I it's interesting, I heard everybody talking about the incident in question that Saturday when the family members came to his house. I talked to him because he called me and we spoke via Skype that day, and it was kind of funny because he's at home eating chicken, celebrating the holiday. There was no one around him. If I recall correctly, he was in his room. I didn't see anyone there. So, you know, while this is going on, what he's doing is trying to enjoy the holiday talking to his family members. I thought that was interesting that is the underlying cause that got us all to be back together here today. More to what I know about him, I was there when he got released in January 2016. My mom was saying, Miss Bishop was saying that she, being a 16-year-old man, came out, and I remember teaching him how to use a debit card, and we were teaching him how to work the little machine to check out at the register. And, you know, he was very excited about that. He was very excited about learning this. He was very excited about shopping, about clothes, about experiencing, you know, being out, because for more than my life, which 39 years is a long time from my perspective, you know, he didn't do any of that. So the person I saw was only interested in getting a chance to restart their life. I don't know much about parole, the condition of parole. That was the first I heard about violations when you were speaking, Ms. Rittenhouse, but the only thing that I've seen him do is try to be a good person. You know, I was there at the family reunion. He was very excited to be there because he got to meet my nephew. My son. His great nephew. I've got a 2-year-old son he never had a chance to meet. He's interested in meeting his family and being around his family, interested in having a relationship with his girlfriend. He's probably one of the kindest people I've met. He always listens to you, always has good advice. I don't know if there was violence in him 50 years ago, 51 years ago, 52 years ago. All I can say to you all is that if your charge is to protect the community, did he make a mistake? From what I understand, Alex, you know, it seems that everybody thinks that, but I do not see him as a risk to me, to my child, to my wife, to my family, or to anyone around him. What I see is a man who's trying to, as he said, live his life and get on with, you know, leave the past in the past.
Thank you, sir. Any questions, board members? Thank you so very much, sir. Who's coming up next, sir?
I don't have any.
Okay, so we're going to let you come up last, attorney, so you, Mr. Hobbs. So now I'm going over to this side of the, and
I'm sorry,
not yet. I do have a brother on the phone. I apologize. Who do I have on the phone? Mr. Michael Hoff, are you on the phone, sir?
Yes, sir. Yes, I am.
Okay. I apologize. So what do you want to tell the board, sir? First of all, please state your name for the record.
Okay. Well, first of all, I thank the board for allowing me.
What's your name first?
My name is Mike Huff, and I'm the younger brother of
Regent Huff. Now, listen, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God, or do you swear firm, sir?
I do.
So what's your name to tell this board, sir?
Well, I don't speak for William. I speak for the Huff family. I speak for a part of the family that you have never heard from, and so we all got together, and I think it's time that you hear from the ones that were left behind years ago after this tragedy happened. Let me start off by saying, first and foremost, to the Haynes family and to the McKellen family, we feel your pain, and we have felt your pain for a lot of years.
Now, you got to speak to the board, so you cannot speak to him. You have to speak directly to
okay.
the board.
Okay. Well, we feel their pain. We have visited, you know, the grave site on many occasions, and trust me, we understand. We watched the last hearing for the very first time that involved William, and I think that was last January, and he made a comment that the family was behind him 110%. All I can say to that is, I know my oldest sister, who I love dearly, named Wanda, is behind him. And I gotta say this about Wanda. Wanda is a good person. She has a kind heart. Wanda has faced a lot of tragedies in her years. And so she's always been there to support William, and she's been there to support us. So I have no qualm with the way Wanda stands by William. Wanda's one person who me and Wanda could go without years for speaking, but if I called on Wanda, she'd be there for me. When William was arrested in 1967, that was the last time we saw him for 50 years. When he was released, he contacted us. And as a family, we asked him to do two things. One, tell us what happened, and understand and apologize for what he put us through. He never did that. Like one of the families, I think it was the Haynes family, said, every time you ask him, he had a different excuse for what he did. We get the different excuses too. To this day, we don't know what he did or why he did it. You know, and as far as him concerning himself on what we went through as a family, we come to the conclusion that he doesn't care. Well, he doesn't care about the pain and the suffering that we all went through as a family. When he got out of jail a couple years ago, it was more, what can we do for him? I think his attitude was, it seemed like because he served 50 years in prison, we as a family owe him something. We owe him nothing. Okay? I heard him say that he attends AA. There's two important steps in AA. The first step says we admit that we are powerless over our addiction and it has made our lives miserable. He needs to figure out what his addiction is. His addiction isn't alcohol and it isn't drugs. He needs to figure out what it is, and then he needs to get help for that. The second step that I think is very important is you make amends to all those that you've harmed, if it's possible. Now, if you were to ask me what my opinion was about him getting out, my answer to you would be, in all honesty, he's been locked up for 50 years. I don't know if you can get anything else out of him. But I would definitely consider releasing him, but it'd be under strict monitoring and some strict mental health. And the third option is, this part of the family really don't want anything to do with him. I mean, it's unfortunate, but that's kind of how we feel. He didn't make any attempt to soothe or understand the pain and suffering that he caused us. So I think if you do release him, that's fine. We have no opinion either way on that. But I think he needs some serious mental help, and I think he needs to be monitored. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Huff. Any questions for Mr. Huff? Hearing none. Now we're over on this side. The county attorney, I apologize for having to get it twice, but would you please state your name for the record?
Of course, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Colleen Clayes. I'm actually not the county attorney, but I'm here on behalf of the victims. But
okay, thank you, ma'am.
Since we are running short on time, I would prefer that you hear from the victims that are on the phone, and then I would like to make a statement if there's time.
Okay, we have two victims on the on the phone, and who wants to speak first? Ms. Haynes, do you want to speak? Haynes?
Sure, that's fine.
Okay.
Yes, can you hear me all right?
Did I swear you in before? I don't think I did I? Do you swear to tell the truth?
No, I don't believe that.
Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God, or do you swear for him?
Yes, I don't.
Would you please state your name for the record?
My name is Melissa Haynes.
And what do you want to tell this board this afternoon, ma'am?
Because we're running short on time, I want to keep this as succinct as possible, and I know that you said that you did not want to hear anything that's already been stated. However, I would just like to use some words that have been said today. According to Mr. Huff's attorney, he stated that Mr. Huff was never alone with the child. However, that has not seemed to be proven today. He previously stated that Mr. Huff has previously stated that he checked in with his parole officer for every little thing. He has made that comment several times in past parole hearings. However, it didn't seem like that seemed to be a priority this time. His attorney has stated that the rules of the law state certain things. However, the rules of the law of the United States state no murder. However, he chose to murder two little girls. I would just like to state for the record the manner in which these two little girls were murdered, a 6-year-old and a 7-year-old, were stabbed, strangled, eviscerated, you name it, hit over the head with a rock, and attempted rape. So this is not something that was just a minor little mistake. This was something that was pre-thought out. He liked it enough the first time that he decided to do it again the second time. He said that he wasn't afraid that he was in violation, and this was brought up by the parole board, and I appreciate you asking the same question. Why was he trying to hide the people that were in his home? I'm curious if his fiance told her daughter about the crimes that Mr. Huff had committed. Another thing that has come up is that the family was homeless, but they only stayed for one night. I find that very curious because, to me, to have them just stay there one night, that just happened to be the time that the parole officers stopped by the house. He says that that's not what he wants to be, is to be a murderer, but that he made that choice by murdering two little girls. And he is the one that has made this a high-profile case, no one else. He is the one that chose to write a letter to the sheriff's department, taunting them, calling himself the Phantom. He gave himself the notoriety that he is now claiming that he does not want. Ms. Bishop has claimed that the only thing that Mr. Huff is guilty of is trusting and loving people. I would beg to differ with that. Two little girls are the victims of trusting and caring for someone.
People learn.
He says that Ms. Bishop states that he wants a normal life, but that is not possible when you have murdered two little girls. She states that a 15-year-old boy went in and a 16-year-old boy came out, but then states that he is a 67-year-old man, not a kid, that has made the statement that he was a 16-year-old boy when he came out. He wants a chance to live out his old life. What about the two victims? The focus here needs to be the victims and what has happened by keeping him out of prison and allowing him to make the mistake that he made of having an 8-year-old girl inside his home. There is no remorse shown by Mr. Huff whatsoever. There never has been, and there never will be, because he is a sociopath. That's all I have to say. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so very much. Any questions, board members? No questions by board members. I'm going to ask that everyone remain quiet. If you cannot remain quiet, then we're going to ask that you leave the room. Okay, so at this time, we will call on Ms. Roy. Ms. Roy, are you still on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Okay, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God, or do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God? This afternoon.
Yes, I do.
And please state your name for the record.
Darlene Roy.
And what do you want to tell the board, Ms. Roy?
I just want to say William Huff brutally murdered my 7-year-old sister, Cindy Cullen. Yes, he wrote a note to the police department calling himself the Phantom. He didn't get caught. Seems like he was going to get away with it. So a month later, he killed Janelle Haynes. Still not caught. He plots to kill a third child who lived on 2nd Street in Sierra Vista. But before he killed her, thankfully he was caught and arrested. Again, he has an 8-year-old girl in his house and a 13-year-old girl, as we just found out through these proceedings. He tries to get away with things, but luckily the door was open so his parole officers spotted the girl. The pattern he keeps thinking is he can get away with things. Never has he shown remorse for killing these two young girls. There's always an excuse why he did it. I feel he has never taken responsibility for these actions. I think he will continue these actions with what he can get away with. I truly believe he should go back to prison. He is in no way rehabilitated to be out in a community. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Ms. Roy. Any questions for Ms. Roy? We have none. Ma'am, is there anything else very briefly that you want to bring before the board? I don't think that's where you were before.
I'm an attorney.
I'm just where you're in this time. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon, Chairman Wright and members of the board. Thank you for allowing me to be heard. My name is Colleen Clace. I'm with Arizona Voice for Crime Victims. There are also other members of my office here in support of Ms. Roy. We are here to oppose releasing inmate Huff back to home arrest. A lot of the issues or concerns that I have already been recognized by the board itself, so I'll be as brief as possible. The crimes that he has committed can be called nothing less than egregious, and to give him that opportunity to be on home arrest and to leave DOC is truly a gift to him and an opportunity for him to show that he has changed and that he can follow direction and live without the structure of the DOC, but obviously still have some structure with his PO. What's extremely concerning to me, not just this violation that he was in the presence of a minor, but looking at his whole history since he's been released, there have been a couple of warnings regarding properly charging his GPS monitor and some issues with curfew, riding his bicycle in the wash, not returning home on time. All of those things coupled together with this violation of being in the presence of a child when he has murdered children is extremely concerning to me. It's extremely concerning to the victims and to the community. And for those reasons, I, on behalf of Ms. Roy, would ask you to revoke his home arrest and send him back to the department.
Any questions? Hearing none. So at this time, I'm going to give each Mr. Huff and his. Did you have anyone else? I'm sorry, did you? Okay, so I'm going to give Mr. Huff 3 minutes, and then give his attorney 3 minutes, and then we'll give the board 3 minutes, and then we're going to come to an end. So do you want to speak first, Mr. Huff, or do you want your attorney to speak first? Okay, please go ahead, sir.
I got three questions. I'm going to pose this board, and I want you to answer me these questions because you're a baby. And they're from my understanding, all right? So question number one is this, and this question is for all of you on the panel. In your files, it will reflect a sentence that I am serving. It was sentenced to the Cochise County Superior Court as a minimum term of 40 years to life. If this is the sentence that you are reading in your files,
we're not going to ask any questions, sir. I'm sorry, we're not going to ask any questions, but you please feel free to ask them, sir.
Okay, I'm going to get this question number two. The criminal offense in which I was convicted in Cochise County Superior Court in 1967 was murder in not the first degree, but the second degree. And it said, are you familiar with old law sentences prior to August 9, 1974, when the law, then, when the office was committed, the statute reflected that one-third of the minimum term to be served before eligible for parole, and the term of life was only 7 years. I got a copy of my competition sheet here. There are a lot of errors on this competition sheet. One error that I've noted, it says life. It doesn't reflect anything about a 40-year life sentence. So, somewhere in the longer line, my sentence has been changed at the DOC level. And it changed from a 4 year to life term to an additional life term. And then it doesn't have no release date. But I got paroled in 1982. And that parole stated that if he is released before April of 1989, we would like to have concurrent supervision and to assign him a parole officer. So somewhere along the line, my sentence has got altered. And I'd like to have an explanation for that, or even have to get to a court to find out what's going on with my sentence. Because I do have a release date. I have an expiration date on the 4 year term, which is the minor term. If one third at that point, it was 13 years that I served, and I went to parole when I made parole. So after 1985, when a protest came down, everything changed. I need an explanation for that. And the only way I want to find an explanation is in court. And we have to take this to court, and this is going to have to be resolved, because everything else seemed to be excessive. And the statutes that you are applying to this case, anybody having victims come to my hearings, those are statutes that disadvantage, and they are barred by the Constitution. You cannot allow anybody to come in that statute in 1956 was formed as a basis for this problem. You are applying statutes that came out in 1978, and that is unlawful in anywhere at any level in the court. So if you take this into an appeals court, they will agree with that. This is egregious. I wish they were egregious, but this is egregious. This is egregious. And, you know, I need an explanation why I've been here 52 years on the 40 to life sentence.
Okay, thank you so much, sir. Any questions by the board member? There's none. Honorable Attorney, sir, a final statement, and I'm going to ask for 3 minutes again, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, thank you for giving me the opportunity to address this body. I would ask that this board take into consideration all information that has been presented today, but also focus on the purpose of the board and focus on the nearly two and a half year history of Mr. Huff's home arrest. I know that there was some attention paid to an issue with the battery of his ankle monitor, but that's 2 years old. That issue never recurred. There was one incident where he lost track of time. That incident has not recurred. He has cooperated well with the parole officers that have been assigned to him. And but for this violation that has been brought to the board today, and that's the only issue that's been brought to the board today, we would not be speaking. I also want to bring to the board's attention his disciplinary record. Again, it was read into the record. He has no disciplinary history. He was a model inmate. He did very well. And since he has been released, he has done what he can to be the best citizen that he can be. He has worked, he has found gainful employment, he has given back to the community, and he endeavors to do that should the board return him to the arrest. Again, under the totality of the circumstances, in this unfortunate situation, I urge the board to find pursuant to the Arizona Administrative Code R-54302D4 that he be reinstated with or without additional conditions, because that would be the appropriate action by the board. Thank you so much.
Thank you so very much, sir. At this time, the board is going into discussion. We're going to ask that everyone remain quiet, both sides, as well as Mr. Huff. Is everyone remain quiet and following this discussion, the board will make its determination. As you know, the board operates under the open meeting laws of the state of Arizona, which means that we discuss everything in public. We do nothing behind closed doors. We don't go back in a closet or anywhere else. Whatever we're going to say it right here so that it will be on the records. So at this time, the board is in discussion. I'm going to reserve my right as chairman, in case after break of time, to be the last one to comment on this one. So any board member wishes to speak first? Member Mr. Johnson.
This has been very interesting. I just want to speak on a couple of issues. The first one is the Andor issue. I do agree with Mr. Mill about the Andor, that the Andor means that he could have permission if there's a parent there, and permission from the PO, or the PO could give him permission to be in that family. And I want to say that both, that I think that Mr. Huff was aware of that, because when he had the family reunion event, he had the permission of the PO to actually attend the family reunion event, and it was put pre-planned, and according to the PO, that they had someone there that was probably there to make sure that there was no incident that actually happened there. So I'm in agreement. I do think the Andor means that permission of the PO, or the PO would have authority to do it, and that's kind of been what the history has been, or what we've actually had the opportunity to see. I also want to address the issue that with Mr. Huff, I think he's well aware of it, that he knows that this has been a high-profile case. It's been a whole high-profile case from the beginning, that he knows that he wasn't to have contact with kids. I do believe the PO, when they went there, that he came out the door and kind of concealed, closed the door so they couldn't see inside. It wasn't until the fiance came outside and left the door open that they saw the 1 8-year-old kid in there on the bed. But according to his fiance, there was another 13-year-old kid that was there, that was in there, that was on the couch, that was unconcealed. So kind of makes me believe that they were trying to conceal him, that they didn't have the opportunity to come out there, because there's no mention of the 13-year-old kid there prior to that. I know that the sister, the fiance invited her sister down there. Just want to acknowledge that she did invite them, that they were homeless, but there was two different statements that was actually given. And according when the PO called the sister-in-law, Ms. Barr, she said that they got there Saturday morning. The fiance testified that they got there Saturday afternoon, that there was just two differences in the times that the families actually arrived there, that there was conflicts in the stories that was actually told. And I just think based on the information, I think according to one of the victims' advocates that was testifying, that this case became a high-profile case as a result of Mr. Huff writing a letter to the news media calling himself the Phantom Murderer, and it's been a high-profile case, but that was not something that was predicted by the community. It was predicted by Mr. Huff writing the letter and labeling himself the Phantom Murderer, and that in that letter it's created this incident that actually happened. So I taken all the information that the family has brought in, and that the prior hearings that Mr. Huff has had, the prior history that Mr. Huff has had, I would just say, just in my opinion, based on that information and the information contained in the warrant 2018W3397, as well as the information that we heard here in the testimony from all those that have been involved both here and on the phone, I do not see personally that Mr. Huff would be suitable to be reinstated on home arrest.
Thank you. Mr. Windhouse.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. And I'll be very brief and just echo what Mr. Johnson has said. The telling information to me is in the warrant itself, and that is that when POs Flores and Keene arrived that day, Mr. Huff was asked to get his copy of his conditions, and he said he didn't know where they were. And this is a person who is on home arrest status, which is inmate status. So I also would not favor return to community supervision.
Thank you so very much. Honorable Ms. DeCarolis.
Thank you, Honorable Dr. Wright. To continue the discussion and to again echo my colleagues, my concern is that Mr. Huff displayed knowledge of his conditions regarding the presence of minors in an open public setting. but did not make immediate notification to his parole officers of the presence of minors in a closed, confined personal living space. I do not believe parole officers were unavailable during weekend hours, not to mention that parole officers violated him on a Sunday and that he was evasive in their presence. And frankly, during our dialogue with Mr. Huff, I find him generally evasive. But that's where we'll continue the discussion.
Thank you, sir. Honorable Mr. Neal, next to last. I agree with my colleagues, and I think there's some of the defense for this is purely semantics. But I also get the feeling that Mr. Huff is somewhat evasive in his answers, and also when it looked, you know, toward the end there, when he wanted to ask us questions, I don't know, it's all about all the unfair treatment and things that kind of comp has to do with and not us and everything, and I very, very strongly got the evasive feeling when his fiance spoke to us. So, and it is a clear violation, and based on the totality of the entire case, I have to agree with my colleague, and I don't see him as a good candidate for return to home arrest at this time.
Thank you so very much. I want to thank all my colleagues for input and for being so generous. As always, I want to thank the supporters of Mr. Huff for coming, the victims for being here. I think that this is one of those situations where Mr. Huff is maybe not by design, but what it turns out to be, he is evasive. He does not really take the whole everything under consideration. Being on home arrest, he should have made sure that if there was any questions at all, that he would have contacted any kind of way his parole officer or someone at that office. I think that Mr. Huff, he was given his freedom. Yet, from my perspective, he violated it. And this is something that we cannot support. Would he commit another crime? We don't know. But he's so evasive. Even his, I hate to put it this way, but even his brother, Michael Huff, had questions about his motive. Never met Mr. Michael Huff, to the best of my knowledge. But he had questions about the motive of his own brother. I said all that just to say this. As one board member, and I do not speak for the board, each of us are independent, but as one board member, I am not in favor of Mr. Huff being removed from home arrest. I think that would be the best thing for him to remain incarcerated, and when he is recertified, he would come before this board again. But based upon everything that I've heard today, and as one board member, the totality, as my good friend Mr. Cabernet would say, I see no reason to release him back on the streets based upon what has been said today. Therefore, I'm going to offer a motion, and my motion is going to be to revoke home arrest for Mr. Huff.
Second.
Agreed.
Okay, but on this one, I'm going to call the roll just for the record.
Yes,
C.T. Wright made the motion. I believe that was Mr. Cabernet. Did you second?
Yes, C.T. Wright seconds.
And agreed by Ms. Woodhouse?
Agreed.
Mr. Neal?
Agreed.
And Mr. Johnson?
Agreed.
By unanimous determination, it's a board. He has been revoked and he will remain incarcerated at this time. We want to thank all of you for participating, and we hope that you have a good day. We're going to ask everyone to please leave without any emotions as we leave this room. Thanks again, and please have a great day. Thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Hart.
thank those on the phone, and thank all of you for your participation as well. And we're going to this, conduct the forum at this time. And
thank you, Mark.